Thanksgiving Day of 1918, my grandmother Corny had written from a Chicago hospital to her 7-year-old daughter back in Iowa, "Dear, dear little Tidy, we have much to be thankful for, but Papa is gaining. When we come home, we will have our turkey together. Papa is better today, and the doctor feels he's getting along fine. Auntie Munn will bring your doll furniture and mass book home with her. How is your doll, Barbara? When I have more time, I will look up some other things for her. Auntie Munn will wash your collars and cuffs on your wool jersey dress in Luxe, and you can wear any of your 3 dresses to school. I want mentholatum up your nose every day, and take Castoria when needed. Auntie Munn will go to Mason City with you, and Mother and Daddy will hurry home. Give Dumpu and Nani my love, and be a good little girl, and do not eat candy. Oceans of love from Mother." But, of course, the doctor had been mistaken. Papa had not gotten better. He had died. There was never to be a turkey together. My mother never talked about the death of her father to me. Yet, more than half a century later, when she herself died, she died only hours away from the exact same day of his death. What a profound statement after a lifetime of silence of just what this loss had meant to her. The widowed Corny, only 38 years old, signed that letter to her little girl, "Oceans of Love." Oceans of Love was not how I had heard my mother describe her relationship with her mother. And wanting to understand what it had once been like, I was able to eavesdrop in a way on their lives in the years following Sam's death when I found 3 girlhood diaries of Mother's. In 1925, at the age of 14, Mother, boy crazy, writes that if she doesn't behave as her mother Corny expects of her, Corny will have spasms, go straight up, or give her Hail Columbia. Indeed, she writes, "Last night, Mother woke me up and told me that someone had said some terrible things about me. I was wild, etc., and she had worried, so she just had to tell me. It was an ugly bunch of lies, and I'd like to get hold of the person who told them." Mother worries about one thing or another most of the time, and her worrying kind of worries me. Teenage Tidy sneaks out the back door of a church group meeting, kisses a boy, and smokes a cigarette. "But," she writes, "someone told Mother about last night, she won't tell me who, and I am chastened, humbled, and heartily ashamed. I asked God for help last night and to show me what was right, and he did in this way, and I thank him that he did. After this, I'm going to play fair, for it wasn't playing fair to Mother to do what I did. Oh, gee, it seems life's just one big struggle, and a hard one at that. Can't a girl be good and yet be a flapper?" But also she writes, "I had a keen talk with Mother today, and I somehow feel a lot closer to her. I found a keen article in a magazine about mothers and daughters, and I read it to Mother, and we had a fine talk. She even admitted she used to spoon. Can you imagine? Human nature doesn't change, though, I guess. And she said that it was all right to let a fellow put his arm around you and kiss you just so he doesn't go farther. Gee, I can sure pet with a clearer conscience now, if I ever get another chance. Mother is doing her best to be a good sport with me, and so I think it's only fair to try to be a good scout with her. I'm going to stay home and try to do things with her a little now." One night, when she's feeling terribly spooky, she reports that her mother is going to sleep with her. And, "I'm popular with girls, but boys, well, I'm a complete flop with everybody but Jimmy, and I don't want him. But Mother said tonight that a woman told her that I was stunning looking, and tall girls can wear their clothes, so that helps." at the end of the school year in 1925. Tidy writes, "The house is sold. I'm really quite sick about it. But Mother mustn't know I am because she feels dreadful herself." Corny even confides to her daughter that a Mr. Smith is in love with her. And Tidy writes, "It's a darn shame that he's tied up to that wife of his. Oh, heck, he ought to be my step-papa." Some years later, after Tidy, who had been an English major, had graduated from college, she wrote a poem for her mother Corny's 47th birthday. "I saw you once across a crowded room where candles glittered, casting faint, warm gleams of yellow light on silver, on the sheen of yellow roses and rich, dim tapestry. Serene you sat, and gracious, firm, proud chin held high, and in one small hand you clasped a fragile, milk-white teacup, and I thought, the essence of her life lies in this room, in these dark panels and that deep blue rug, this polished silver, that burnished copper vase, a sheltered life, apart, above the rest." Corny's second marriage in 1932, the same year that my parents got married, obtained for her that sheltered life apart, above the rest. She married a very rich man, and they lived as if the Depression didn't exist. A newspaper society reporter described the surf club in Miami Beach, which Corny and her husband belonged to. "Breathtaking elegance, the great lounges, the high-vaulted dining rooms, the dance patios, pool, blue and gold mirrored terrace bar, the Mediterranean cafe, the curving line of 235 double-decked cabanas on the ocean front." That ocean of love that at one time existed between mother and daughter gradually emptied out. Photos of mother when she was a child show her extremely dressed up, Corny's beautiful little doll. But daughters, unlike dolls, grow up, fall in love with and marry someone their mother might not like, become individuals with their own ideas. Corny did not approve of my father. She did not approve of large families. She did not approve of mother's housekeeping or of her enthusiasm for President Roosevelt. The interests of mother and daughter continued to diverge. While Corny attended balls at the surf club, mother had five children, and Corny's second husband had to give my father a job. On a visit mother made to Corny in Miami Beach, a photograph was taken of the two women standing on the surf club's outdoor stairs, each wearing a sparkly pin. Corny's is shaped like a fish, mother's like a bird. Mother looks strained and uncomfortable in her mother's world, a fish and a bird, unable to breathe in one another's space. Many years later, mother said to me of her mother Corny, "She cares more for things than for people." Indeed, I met my grandmother only a few times, although she lived until I was 21. By 1962, when Tidy was 51, her mother, Corny, wrote her, "Dear Tidy, your letter came yesterday, and I was glad to hear you had a nice trip home in spite of my being ill, for I am sorry, but I was ill just looking at you. Well, if it takes 7 months to get that awful color out of your hair, it must be pretty strong stuff, and so I will make up my mind not to see you again for some time, if I am still alive at that time. I am nearly 78, and anything might happen. And if it does before then I wouldn't see you or know how you looked." A few years later, when Corny was in a final illness, mother wrote me that she was dreading going to see her in Wisconsin. She wrote, "One moment she's pleasant, and the next minute damning everyone. Yesterday she telephoned me and said not to come. She didn't want me there now. But of course, I have to go anyhow. They're having trouble with nurses, and I'll have to help out that way whether she likes it or not. So it all sounds jolly. No? No. I'll call you sometime from up there. In the meantime, drop me a note and cheer me up." But as it happened, Corny was alone when she died. Tucked into an envelope she left for Mother was a yellowed newspaper clipping with this poem. A daughter is a lovely gift who brings so much of pleasure. Throughout the years, through smiles and tears, she is a blessed treasure. A daughter is a precious gem, adds luster to our living, makes dreams come true and keeps them new, a cause for real thanksgiving. In 2003, the early summer morning clouds were pink. It was going to be another hot day. I had packed Mother's diaries, letters, and some of the photos of her as a child and young woman in my green canvas carry-on. I didn't want to entrust them to the airline in my checked bag. I had awakened about 5, had my tea, stirring it, as usual, with Corny's silver spoon engraved with the words, Charles City, Iowa. I had just enough time before the cab came to shower and finish packing. In Boston, at the baggage claim, I heard a shouted, Cornelia! And there was my old friend, Mary. Since I had last seen her, her hair, like mine, had grown a little gray. Like me, she no longer looked young, but her face was still beautiful. Mary and I had become friends at 16, when Mother and Pop and I had moved to Plymouth. It was Mary who had said, remembering Mother, I never knew anyone could have a mother like yours. I couldn't believe that she had memorized all of Hamlet just for the fun of it. Mary had come up from the Cape to accompany me to the Arthur and Elizabeth Schlesinger Library on the History of Women in America, part of the Radcliffe Institute for Advanced Study and the Harvard University Library, where I had found a permanent home for Mother's girlhood diaries from the 1920s, for her letters and the mementos Corny had saved, for the photographs of 3 generations of women in my family. The Schlesinger Library's mission was to document the lives of ordinary American women. The library had offered to take everything, and I had come to Cambridge to deliver Mother's diaries. In Cambridge, Mary and I walked across Radcliffe Yard, stopping outside the neat brick building with white painted trim that housed the Schlesinger Library. I felt suddenly frightened. I had already taken, from the little pile of papers I had packed, 1 of Mother's letters to me from the nursing home, unable just yet to relinquish it, because once I handed over her papers to the library, I would, finally, be leaving her behind. Inside the Schlesinger, it was cool, sunlit, quietly humming with women writing, reading, researching, and cataloging like a hive of female bees. The curator brought us to her office, where I took Mother's precious things out of my green canvas bag and explained each item as she took notes. As we left her office, I turned at the door to look back for a moment at Mother's things. Mary stayed to talk to someone, and as soon as I was alone outside, I began to sob. Mother was dead. She had been dead for many years. But in the archives of the Schlesinger Library, that girl my mother had once been, described by her college friend Bill Maxwell as more vivid than other girls, would always live. That girl who had written in her diary at 16 of her boyfriend, oh, he's a sweet thing and I love him so, and I love life and everything's beautiful.